before we were public entertainers, we were public servants. John was a cop. I was a teacher. Let's put those careers under the microscope.
Welcome to Faith, Freedom, and Fitness, the podcast where God, government, and gluten collide. Introducing your host, John Turk, a former police officer, fitness cover model, and the real-life inspiration behind Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat. He is joined by Michael Wayne Foster, a former school teacher, actor, and model who's graced the covers of over 800 romance novels. Get ready for the F3 podcast.
So, I mean, kids grow up, at least back in our time, John, you grew up playing cowboys and Indians, cops and robbers, all that sort of stuff. Is that what made you want to be a police officer? I mean, how does one go from being, someone that does a lot of exercise physiology, I think that's what you did in college, to taking that and becoming a cop? What happened?
Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't something I was like pursuing. I was always about, you know, I mean, I was a kid that pushed the boundaries. I never did enough to get arrested or do anything crazy. I mean, a couple of times I probably could have, but I was always about, you know, being a decent dude, you know, and being honest. And so I was always one about the law. You know, I always thought the respect of the law. I had friends that were police officers. So when I graduated college, didn't know what I wanted to do. And I just went out and partied, man. I became a male stripper in Texas. I worked at a club. It was like a Chippendales. It was called LaBear. And I did that for like up to a year. And I had a lot of fun. But one morning I just woke up and I started thinking about my friends back home, getting married, having kids. And starting their lives, they all had good jobs, engineers, accountants, owned businesses. And here I am, you know, in a club dancing. I just felt like kind of like a loser, you know. I thought, what am I doing with my life? And so I told my roommate at the time, and I was living with him and his girlfriend. And I just got up one morning. When I make decisions, I make my mind up pretty quick, and I know what I want. And that's the one thing I could say about myself. It's not like I just do things at the spur of the moment, but pretty much I follow where my heart wants to go. And that's what I decided. I'm going to go home and I'm going to get a job, you know. And the guy I was living with, his name was Bob. Bob was a policeman in the town that I ended up working in. And so I told him, I said, Bob, you know, I'm going to go back to Chicago. And his girlfriend was like my sister. Bob was like my best buddy at the time. And he goes, what do you mean? When are you going to go? We got 4 more months left on our lease. I said, I'm going to leave tomorrow. And they're like, what? What do you mean you're going to leave tomorrow? And I said, I'm not going to stiff you on the rent. I'll give you 4 months rent. I said, if you find somebody else, just let me know. I appreciate it. And that way I don't have to pay you. You know, he goes, I said, but I'll find out. I think my other buddy will take the lease up if you want him to move in. He said, yeah, that's cool. So, man, I just packed it up the next day. And I remember him and Tammy were standing outside and I was getting into my little red truck ready to make my 24-hour car ride home. And, you know, we're all bawling and crying because we had a lot of fun together, you know, and I just jumped in my car and I drove home. And before I left, Bob said, you know, John, he goes, I think you'd be a good cop. He goes, you got good street smarts and you're really in shape, dude. You should work at the department I worked at. He goes, they like guys that are in shape and you're, you know, you got your shit together. I think that would be a good mix. So I just went back and that always kind of sat in the back of my mind. I never thought about being a policeman, really. I mean, I thought, you know, that's actually a pretty good idea. I think I could see myself doing that. So I got home and sure enough, the department he was talking about was hiring. They were hiring, you know, one officer. So I got back in like, I think it was like November and December 1st, it came out. They were hiring a new guy after the new year. So they started testing in like January and I went to the orientation and there was like 400 guys there. I mean, a lot of guys applying for this one job.
One job.
Yeah. Yeah. This is back in 1989. So you got to realize being a policeman then was still a pretty cool thing, right? Like now the media has destroyed the whole law enforcement community, you know, and it's just really sad. But so I just looked around the room and I go, man, how am I going to get hired in here? And not only that, I'm seeing other policemen in uniform in there applying because it was a popular town to work for. It was in a good area of the, you know, Chicago metro area. You know, you have bad parts like anything else, but it was a good area to work. And so I said, you know, what the heck, I'll do it. So it was the orientation day. And they said, you know, next week we're going to start the written exam. You come in, we're only going to take a certain amount of you guys. We're not going to take everybody, even if you pass. And I'm like, okay, I'll know if, you know, it's meant to be. And, you know, and so I went in and I took the written test and they called me up and they said, you know, a lot of people pass, but we're taking only a certain percentage of them, and you're in there. Do you want to continue on? Because sometimes other guys get hired by departments and they drop out, or they just don't make it, right? So,
I got to stop you right there. I have to ask a question. So you took a written test. What kind of stuff is it? Is it like algebra, composition, or is it stuff like, hey, if a thug's coming at you with a knife, do you A, pull your pistol, B, retreat? I mean, what do they ask you?
So, I mean, a lot of it is basic knowledge, right? When you look at school, you have your core classes you got to take your first 2 years. So they do want to know if you have common sense. And so you get a lot of that, but they did have a lot of questions where you get like 1 minute to look at a picture and it's a crime scene. And then afterwards that they pull the picture away and you got to say, okay, well, the guy with the gun, what was he wearing? You don't know what they're going to ask you and you got to basically put it down. So it's your observing skills. So they did a lot of that on the test too. And they had, questions about law, questions about liability and that kind of thing. And I've always been kind of a liability minded person. I'm always thinking, how am I going to get sued here? So I always thought about that. So I think it helped me out a lot. And so I passed the written, and in the next test, some guys didn't pass and dropped out and it kept going and going. And then I knew I'd do well at the physical fitness test. And, it was how much of your percentage of your weight can you bench press? You didn't have to, but I my body weight at that time, I think was like 215, and I could bench 315 at the time for 22 reps. That was pretty good. Yeah. I did three. Yeah. So I was pretty strong. So I did that, and I knew the run I would be decent in. You had to do like a mile and a half run. You had to do a certain amount of sit-ups in a minute. You had to do a certain amount of flexibility, and being in martial arts at that time, I was still doing that. I could do the splits, the Japanese splits. I could do everything, So I was.
When you rolled in there, were there any of the stereotypical donut eating looking dudes in there?
Yeah.
Were they there?
Did you?
I know what you look like. Everyone that listens to this podcast probably has seen your covers before. I mean, you look like a Spartan. So when you go rolling in there, were the rest of them? Did you see some doughy dudes that were probably like, oh man, he's here?
Yeah. No, I mean, there are a lot of doughy dudes, but I'll tell you, not all of them are bad cops. A lot of them, you know who will make a really good cop? If you're someone that has really good street smarts and you're not that book smart, but you got really good street smarts, that's what's going to get you through better than a book smart guy. A lot of times the book smart people, they just don't see beyond the numbers. You know what I'm saying? They're too black and white, and they don't really look at the gray area very much. And you got the street smart guys that are really good at that. Like there's a couple guys that I worked with that didn't have a college degree, but I would have put them up against anybody, really street smart guys, So, I mean, you get a lot of that. You get doughy guys, but, I had doughy guys in a department that worked. And, if it came down to it, they could back you up. The thing that scared me, and I don't mean anything bad by this, was a lot of the women that worked with us. Just, I was really nervous to have them backing me up if I got in a fight or anything like that with multiple people. And it wasn't a good situation that made me feel comfortable. Were they smart enough to do the job? Street smarts, yes. But a lot of them, I worried about my physical well-being. And that's the only problem I have. Now, if a woman could pass the same physical fitness test as me, like there's some of the girls in the UFC, I'd have no problem with them backing me up, right? But it's what I really didn't like about being
Officer
a cop.
Rousey?
Yeah. Like what I really didn't like about it was, why do the women have to do less of everything than the men? They should have the same requirements. And if they can do the same physicality, they're fit for the job. I mean, that's a job where not only you got to have a brain, but you also have to have the physical components to, number one, save your life or your partner's life. And it's really important. And for some reason, that's been like adjusted so they can hire more women. And it's just wrong, especially when it comes to a job like that. So that kind of bothered me. But, I passed all the tests, and then they had the lie detector test. Then we had the psychological exam, and you do all these things. And I ended up passing all of them. And I'm looking at the sheet, and they can tell you who's left. And before you know it, I'm like getting to like what they call the police and fire commission interview. And at that point, there was only 10 guys left, and I was one of them. And they're only hiring one spot. So now I have to interview for the police and fire commission. So at the time, I had really long hair. I had like yours. Even longer, like when your hair was the longest, that's what mine was in back. I had the Billy Ray Cyrus hair. I had the mullet.
Yes.
Yeah. And so what I did is I wore a suit for the police and fire commission and I rolled it into a ball. I had a ponytail and I tucked it in. I go, oh man, they're gonna see this and they're going, this guy's a total schmuck, you know? So I walk into the interview and one of the police and fire commission sitting there and he's got a big long ponytail down the back. I go, okay, at least this guy's gonna have my back possibly, you know? So they ask you a whole bunch of questions. It's really interesting what they ask you, though. A lot of times they're seeing, because it's paramilitary, when they interview you, they're going to see if you are a military mindset. So in other words, they're going to ask you questions about your supervisor. If you saw your supervisor doing this, would you tell on him? Would you tell him he's wrong? If you saw your supervisor doing this, they want to see how well you fall in line, because it's military, right? And they don't want a guy in there that's going to be butting heads with their supervisor all the time. So they really look at that with a fine microscope when they're interviewing you. So I had those questions and I answered them well. The one they asked me was, you know, things about if you saw your supervisor doing this. And one of them asked me and I said, well, that's kind of borderline. And he goes, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, is it a crime? Did he do that? And would it be considered a crime? And it had to do with taking something from someone else. And they said, yeah, it would be considered a crime. I said, then I would have to say something and I would go to the supervisor above him and let him know what I saw. I said, I don't think that the police are above the law either, you know, and they really liked that answer. They said, okay, that's good because, and then I found out they told me afterwards when I ran to them, they would say, hey, you know, that answer you gave was really good because you really don't get any feedback. So when I got done, one of them said to me, it was pretty interesting. He said, they were asking me just an individual personal questions afterwards. And it was like 45 minutes or an hour I was in there. And one of them said to me, hey man, we noticed you got a ponytail. You tried hiding it, but it's pretty easy to see. If we hire you, would you cut your ponytail off? And I looked at him, I said, man, if you want me to, I'll shave my head bald. And then everyone laughed. And then the guy with the ponytail, I looked at him and I winked, you know, and he winked back at me. So it was kind of funny. I could tell he was kind of like, don't worry about it, I got you. And so, then we just started talking. It was kind of interesting because I was pretty muscular at the time. And one of them said to me, hey, man, we noticed you lift weights and your friends with Bob. And they mentioned his last name. I don't want to throw his name out there. But rumor had it, you know, when he worked here, he was on steroids. Do you take steroids? And I said, no, I don't. And they said, did Bob take steroids? And I go, I really don't feel like I should answer that question because he's not here to defend himself. And I said, I don't know. It wasn't my business. We hung out, we worked out here and there, but you know, that was that. And so, you know, that's kind of how I answered it. I was very diplomatic in how I would do things. You know, you got to really watch how you answer questions. And the great thing was after there, I walked out, I felt pretty good. And then they called me up like, you know, 4 or 5 days later, the secretary, and she says, well, I got good news and bad news. And I says, well, give me the bad news first. She goes, well, you know, originally we were going to hire one person and you're number two on the list. And I said, you said originally. I said, what does that mean? She goes, well, the good news is we decided to hire two people. Do you want the job? And I said, she goes, now you could take, you know, a week or so to think about it. I go, I don't need to think. I said, yeah, I want the job. I'll take it. You know, she goes, okay, right. Good. I'll let the commission know. And then I got hired, dude. And it was a lot of fun. You know, I went to Chicago Police Academy, which was really cool. And you know who my drill instructor was? Mr. T's brother.
Stop it.
Yeah. Really cool guy, man. He's since passed away. Rest in peace. But he was like one of the coolest dudes. His name was Mike Tiro. Mr. T's real name is Tiro. And okay. So he had a bunch of brothers and sisters too. And I guess there was some animosity in the family from what I heard that, you know, Mr. T, when he became famous, kind of forgot where he came from, supposedly. So there was some animosity there. But Tiro was really cool dude. Very physically fit guy.
Did he look like T at all?
No, not at all. He was a more thinner, more athletic looking. Okay. He had a bald head like that. You could see the resemblance, right?
Did he sound like him? I mean, was there any like dead meat, pity the fool?
No. He was a woman.
No, you know,
not at all. He was a pretty straight up dude. I actually liked him a lot. He was a really good guy to have as, you know, your drill instructor. But, you know, we used to do, he knew myself and this other guy named Kaz in the academy. We were the two fittest guys. I was stronger, but Kaz was way more like endurance-wise. He was a good runner, still a respectable strength. So we were always like, you know, the two guys that they would pair us up, you know. So one day we had to do this drill where it was a bar fight, and Tiro and this other guy were acting like they were in a fight, and we had to get them out of the bar. and nobody else could get them out of the bar because they were pretty strong dudes, you know. Well, Kyle's and I walked up, and before earlier, like in 2 weeks earlier, they showed us a technique in one of the defensive training tactics where you could take your thumb and jam it behind someone's ear, and they'll just basically, it kills them, you know. So yep. I remember that, and so did Kaz. I said, hey, man, everyone's failing. They can't out-muscle these guys. I said, we could, but it's going to look stupid. I said, just both jam our finger in the back of his ear. So we grab his one arm, and I grab the other one, and we both jam our thumb in his ear, and he drops right to his knees. He's okay, done. And we just dragged him out, and he stood up. He goes, see, these are two guys that remembered what they've been taught. You need to think about what you're doing. So we looked really good, you know. But so that's
I got to ask you, John, because that's happened to me. A friend that's a police officer did that to me once. I know what you're talking about. There's no joke. And the other one was like a forearm situation. Like there's like a certain part of your forearm. He dug his thumb into that. And I was like, oh.
Yeah. It's right behind the elbow. Point? If you do it right behind and above the elbow, it hurts, man. You could take your own fingers and you're like, ah. So that's a good spot too. You know, they do teach you to put your knee on the back when you get somebody down. And that was the thing in the George Floyd. They showed an angle. It looks like he had it on his neck. But when you look at the other cop's camera that was standing right there looking down, he didn't have his knee on his neck. It was on his back the whole time. So the media continually showed that photo looking like he was smashing his neck. And he was saying, I couldn't breathe. He didn't have it on his neck. It was far from his neck. But the angle of it looks like it's on his neck. So they kept showing that. And they didn't show the other guy's camera view where it's not on his neck, it's on his back, which is what we were taught to do.
So let's get into that for a second. So when you go to the police academy, first of all, I got to ask you, because you're the only person I've ever talked to that's been through the police academy that could tell me this. Is it like the movie at all?
No.
Other than, I mean, it's like kind of like, you know what I'm saying? It's like you go out and march and you got one guy there like Tackleberry that just wants guns. And
you know, you do have that, but it's not like that bad, you know? Like, and you know something, what's really cool about Chicago, the academy there was a lot of the instructors, you know, they're down to earth guys. They're funny guys. They're ball busters, just like a lot of cops. That's why I love the job. The guys you work with, everyone's pretty witty, good with the comebacks, funny, you know, street guys. And so it's like you're hanging out with your buddies, you know, a lot of the time. I mean, yeah, you got some nerds there, but like when I was in investigations, the guys I worked with were really cool dudes, got along really good with them. Funny. I mean, we used to have a great time. So, you know, you go in there with this attitude of, you know, you're hanging out with your buddies. That's why I missed a job in a lot of ways. And you're going to have guys on there you don't like. But all in all, you know, like in the police academy, here's an example of ball busters. So about halfway through, I would get tired. It's midday and I would fall asleep in class and the teacher come up and slam my head. Hey, man, wake up. What are you going to do if you're in a situation? I go, I'm sorry, coach. I'm just really tired, you know. So one day I crash out completely. My head's back. My mouth is open. Well, he has the whole class get up and leave the room. You're talking about 100 guys. Leaves the room. He turns the light off, and he sends a janitor in there with a mop. And the janitor comes up, wakes me up. He goes, hey, man, what the fuck? It's like 9 o'clock at night. When are you going to go home? I go, what? Uh-huh. And I jump up, and I run out of the room, and everybody's in the hallway laughing at me, you know?
Oh,
so that's the kind
man.
Of things they would do to you, you know?
All right. That's pretty cool.
So after a while, they were calling me Rip Van Winkle, you know. But it was a great time.
I was going to say the academy. It sounds like it was classes and it was physical training as well. Those pressure points, that sort of thing.
Yep. You have physical training. You have law. You have regular class, like situations and things like that. Then you have traffic stops. You get out and you pretend you're stopping a car. Everything you'd have on the street. And then you have report writing, you have case law where you go over stuff. So, I mean, it's 3 solid months, 8 hours a day of class and learning, you know. And then for 3 months, you go out onto the street with a field training officer and you train on each shift. So you get to see what each shift has. Like night shifts, you got a lot of DUIs, you get a lot of bar fights, domestic calls. During the day shift, you get a lot of like dumb calls, dog calls. You know, calls for assistance, you get retail thefts, stuff like that. And the afternoon shift is absolutely the busiest one. I mean, you're running and running because it's, you know, it's mid-afternoon, 3 o'clock, right before rush hour, tons of accidents. You get a lot of stolen autos. You get domestics. You get everything, bar fights. You get, hit and runs. You get stolen autos. I mean, I've been in some really hairy stolen auto chases. You get a lot of car chases. It's fun. And our department would let you chase if they knew you were a pretty level-headed dude and you were good about calling out your situation. And you know, they would want you to call your speeds out too. That's the other thing. A lot of times they're worried, you know, is it worth chasing this person? What did they do? Well, if you got a guy that went in a store and stole some candies running out, they're more than likely not going to let you chase them. But if you have a situation where, like, for example, we had one that was a real hairy one where a guy went into a house, home invaded it, and then we were sitting at the stop sign right by it. Well, the call hadn't come out yet, and we both were sitting there, me and my buddy. It was right before our shift was going to get off. And Mark goes, man, did you see that car just go blow through that stop sign? Flying, he just did something. Well, right then the dispatcher goes, anybody in the area, you know, such and such, we just had a home invasion with the car stolen. Mark goes, that's the car. So we started chasing. The guy took off like flying. So our supervisor in a situation like that would say, go ahead and pursue it. If it gets too dangerous, I may call you off. And then you get on and you call what's called the state police. You get on what's called ISPRN, which is the Illinois State Police Radio Net Emergency Network. And then you broadcast it to all police departments that you're in this chase because you could end up going into other jurisdictions.
Okay.
And then it gets hairy. And like these guys turned out on the road. And when they went onto the main highway, they went the opposite direction. So they're going against traffic. And So I'm on the other side. Mark's following them with his lights on so he can alert people. And they're just going back and forth. Well, they realize we're not going to make it in this lane. They go to cut over and they hit the raised median like you would see in a movie. Mm-hmm. The car sails through the air, Mike, does one of those turns like you'd see in a movie and lands on the roof, paralyzes the one guy, almost kills the other guy. And sure enough, they had those people at gunpoint, stole their car and stole stuff from their house. So, you know, is it our fault that they flipped over? No, it's their fault that they were running. But people will still sue the police, right? Even though they were the ones who caused the whole, you know, circumstances. But so that's what you're dealing with on that afternoon shift. It gets hairy.
I got to ask you. So on the police chases, do you get a ghetto bird or a chopper, whatever you want to call it, like air support? How often does air support come?
Well, if it ends up being a lengthy chase and it's getting very dangerous, they'll call out, like, you know, the county, like the county I worked in too, has its own chopper and it would call it out. It's usually on call. And the state police has one too, and they're pretty nearby. So a lot of times, depending on the chase, if it's involving multiple jurisdictions, they'll call out the chopper, and then the chopper will relay where they're at, and other jurisdictions can lay down this, you know, the tax strips and stop right. them, you know. And so that's when you'll have a bird get involved. But a lot of the times they end before that. Like I had one chase. I'll tell this story real quick. So I had a guy home invaded in the town next to us. And actually we were pulling him over and he was wanted for murder. And so when we went to pull him over, he took off. So my buddy Mark was chasing him, or Steve, and Steve's calling out, you know, hey, I need backup. So I was ended up being right there. So Steve chased him. And then what I would do is call out the streets we're on. So we started getting into the town next to us, and the town next to us was a pretty aggressive town. It was actually had a lot of, you know, unsavory neighborhoods, so to speak. And so they got involved. Well, this guy, I cornered him at the end of a cul-de-sac. And I got out of my car and we both pigeonholed him in like this. But there was still an opening where he can get through. But we both got behind our cars. And then the guy sat there looking at us with his buddy in the passenger seat, smiling, big smile from ear to ear. And I got out and I was pointing my gun at him. I said, get out of the car, get out of the car. He smiles, revs it, and does a brake torque and tries running me over. And so I jump out of the way. The car literally hits me. And I look at him as he goes by and he's smiling at me. And I just go, man, this guy's, who does that, right? So he goes past us, goes to the next block. We jump in the car. We follow him. I go, okay, we got him again on a cul-de-sac, right? Drives right through the people's house, right through their yard, right out the backside. And I look at Steve. I go, I'm not going to follow him. This is getting crazy, you know? So we called it out. And they ended up finding a car on the highway. Empty. They just opened the doors and ran. So I said, we're going to find these guys now, you know, but nobody knew what they looked like. So they got the dogs out there searching and they find these two guys laying in the field. Right. And description was, you know, all they could give on the radio was two male black occupants. So we get out and the policeman says to me, hey, we found these two guys in the field, you know, two black guys. We don't know if it's the guys because we don't have a description of them. Right. So he goes, they tell us they're just out here hanging out. You know, we don't know what they're doing, but I think it's them. So I walk up and I look at the one guy, and it was grilled in my head what he looked like. First of all, his smile. And I remember he had a blue jacket on, and he had a white shirt underneath. And I look at him and I said, "That's a driver and that's the passenger." And I go, "Smile for me," just like that. And he gives me a big smile. I go, "I remember that smile." I go, "Where's your blue jacket?" And he goes, "I don't have it." I go, "We look in his car and see if there's a blue jacket." And sure enough, they find a blue jacket in the car. So we arrested him. He was a guy. I had to go to court on that. It ended up being a good ending, but you can have some bad endings too, you know, just like the guys that ended up dying in it and rolling over. So
paralyzed. Let me ask you this. You mentioned domestic disturbance, that kind of thing. I mean, have you ever, all I can think of when I think of that is that movie Sling Blade with Billy Bob Thornton. He was "I'm hurting Linda. I'm hurting Linda." Is that the kids are throwing stuff at him and all that. I mean, did you ever come into something like that where you had a drunk dude in there or something that was, you know, beating the wife and kids and it got physical? And
yeah, I mean, we've had
what happens when you roll into a domestic disturbance? What's it like?
So the thing about domestics that's really kind of scary is when you're on a domestic call, it can escalate in seconds. And you got to really, right when you get in there, the first thing you're looking at is what's in the room that can be used as a weapon? And is there a weapon anywhere in the room? That's the first thing I always did. Number one was I assessed the scene to see what dangers are possible. Okay. And so like a lot of times, like, so for example, one of our guys went in on a domestic call and after a while you get complacent and you think I'll be fine. It's just another typical argument. You know, he went into the house and the other guy just arrived. As he was coming in the house, the guy was coming down the stairs with a shotgun, racks it, points it. Mike and the other guy dropped to their knees and he just looked at him. Now he's like realizing I'm going to be dead, dropped the shotgun and just went like this, you know? And so you have a situation like that. That's pretty crazy. And then, so another one I went on was like, for example, I had a guy, he's about your height, 300, pretty much you, right? And he's a little bit disturbed. And I get to the house and I said, "What's wrong?" And his mother, he lived with his mother. He's like, you know, 30 something years old. She goes, "He's out of control. And I can't do anything. He's so big." And I get in and there's this big dude and I see blood is coming out of his hand and he's just grinning his teeth and he's going like this. I said, "Hey man, your hand's bleeding." He goes, "Yeah, I know." I go, "Well, open your hand. Let me look at it." And he goes, "No." And I walk up and I go, "Wow, he must have something in his hand that's cutting him, you know?" I said, "Hey man, I don't want to argue with you. You know, let's just go outside." "No, no." He starts arguing. And then he comes at me, takes a swing. I end up tackling him to the ground. My buddy partner's there, Tom. Tom's a real thin guy. And he starts wrestling and we're trying to control the guy. And I'm like trying to get his hand open because I don't know what's in his hand. And so all of a sudden, Tom's got his one arm. I said, "Tommy, I'm going to cuff him. Make sure you got that other arm." Right as I say it, the guy breaks free and just punches me right in the mouth, chips two of my teeth. And so I got his hand here. So I took my pepper spray. I put it in his mouth, sprayed it, and it shot out of his nose. I mean, I was like, there's no way I'm going to sit here and fight with this guy when my partner can't control him. So the minute I did that, he just started choking and I was able to cuff him and we were get him under control. But I had three chipped teeth out of it, you know?
So when he punched you, is it time are you allowed to throw a little bit of a beat in their way?
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to beat him in a way that's going to de-escalate the situation. In other words, I want to take away his offense. So my first thing was to number one, try to get his hands subdued, but I couldn't because Tommy didn't. So what I did is I grabbed him around the neck and got like a little chokehold on him while we can get more control of him. And then I was able to get on top of him. I remind you that even though he was bigger than me at the time, I'm still pretty strong, you know? So I was able to control him, especially if I had another guy there. And then I cranked his arm behind his back. And then I walked out and I said, the other guys ended up showing up. We ended up arresting him. And here's the thing about this domestic situation people don't realize. Even though this lady called the police on him, you still have to worry about the other person that called because that's still their loved one. And they're going to stick up for him regardless. So you'll go on a domestic call with a husband and wife. She's called because she's getting beat up. The minute if you get in a scuffle with him, she's cracking you over the head. And you're like, "Wait a minute, what's going on here?" So when we arrested him, she's screaming at us, don't do that. Don't do that. I'm like, "Don't do what? He just chipped three of my teeth, man. What do you want me to do?" Oh, so, man. I mean, you're in an unwanted situation. We had one guy killed a guy. He walked into a situation of a domestic. This is why domestics are crazy. The husband, ex-husband or boyfriend came. The lady lived there with her kid, was coming from New York. She called us and said, "Hey, my ex is on the way. and I'm a little nervous. All of a sudden, and we thought he's coming from New York, right? So we're not too worried about, well, he gets there. He was coming from somewhere near in the area. He told her that, but he was actually in town. And so he got to the house in like 2 minutes and she calls us screaming. So the guys got there. And when they get there, he realizes where he grabs her little girl around the neck, put a knife to her neck. Oh, man.
What?
She's a little girl. He's got the knife to her neck. One of our guys walks in. He's a pretty good shot. And he says, drop it, drop it. And he made a move like he was going to do something. And he shot him right in the head. I mean, a pretty hairy.
You saw this?
No, he was one of the guys I worked with. He ended up shooting the guy right in the head. So, you know, you hear about everything the next day. And, you know, so now he's got to live with the fact, you know, this little girl's got to have this in her head, this gun going off, just blasting the guy in the head next to her. And now he's got to live with the fact he killed this guy. This girl's mind is probably messed up for good. So, I mean, you know, domestic calls are one of those things where you really got to be 100% focused on every one of them because you just don't know when it's going to go, right?
Yeah.
So that's the thing about that afternoon shift. That's going back to what we were talking about.
Well, let's go from domestic, afternoon, morning. We did all those. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a current event right now. I'd love to have your professional opinion on.
Yeah.
You got the LA riots happening right now. And Lord knows I lived through those. What the St. George Floyd, we lived through those riots. And I mean, scary stuff. So it's happening again right now. And I can't help but to notice that you see these skirmish lines of police officers, but they are vastly outnumbered by, you know, your typical jackass throwing bricks and concrete and all that stuff at them and all that. My question is like, you were just talking about how you and Tommy, I believe it was trying to wrestle the guy to the ground and you couldn't get a hold of him. That's just one guy, two police. And it seems like a lot of times you'll see these people that are out of control. You'll see three or four police officers trying to subdue it. Well, what do you do when you got, like, just for the sake of numbers, 200 police officers in a line in a riot and 2,000 people coming at them? I mean, what are you trained to do there?
Well, first thing you think about is, all right, so how can we de-escalate this situation? The thing that happens is once you start getting, like, taking, like, fire, so to speak, like rocks hitting you in the head, that's when you start moving them back with your shield. Because at that point, if there's a lot of people, you're going to have a shield, you're going to have a helmet, you're going to have a club, you're going to have big giant canisters of pepper spray, rubber bullets. So you're going to have all that stuff. You use all that first, unless you got some guy coming at you with a gun, then you're going to use your deadly force. But in riots, you're normally given things that will be used to de-escalate the situation, not cause harm, but hurt people. You get hit by a rubber bullet, dude, you're not going to forget it. It hurts. And you're going to have a good welt. But, you know, it's still going to stop people from advancing, right? But, you know, the thing of it is, all right, so you look at these riots that are going on in L.A., and the liberal media is telling you that because of Trump, he escalated it with the military. No, he didn't. What happened was when ICE was arresting people, they act like they're arresting everyday citizens. It is not that. They're going in and strategically arresting gangbangers, criminals, and things like that. And then they take them from the house. And these criminals know they got to get their family to speak up, like they're taking this good, you know, hearted individual away and being the big American bullies. Well, my question is number one, if that was the case, and they're rounding up everybody, they could go to a million job sites in LA and just start rounding people up, and they're not doing that. So what happened?
Go to any restaurant in LA and go to the kitchen.
Yeah, exactly. And if they did go to a kitchen like they did with that one guy, it's because he was a known scumbag, you know, but they don't tell you this in the media. And so as a cop, what ICE is doing is they're going in and strategically removing certain people. Well, the liberals want to cause all this unrest. So they get these paid agitators to go in and agitate and escalate the situation. Now they start attacking ICE. Now realize, they attacked federal officers. That's an insurrection. All right. It's not just people attacking. It's an insurrection. That's what it is. And if you look at the situation, now you have the right as the federal government, if the local police are not protecting or working with ICE, the federal government has every right to come in and number one, protect the ICE officers and protect federal property. And that's what they did. But what the media did and the scumbag liberals did as far as and I'm not even going to call them liberals because you and I were both liberals. We know what a liberal is, right? These aren't liberals. These are communists.
They're Marxists.
Yeah, they're Marxist. So what they did is they want to create unrest and chaos, and they went and reported on the media that, look at Trump escalating the situation. No, he didn't. It was escalated by people attacking ICE, attacking federal property, and Trump said, now I have the right to go in and help, number one, help the police. And Newsom didn't call and for police reinforcements to like, I think, a day and a half later. And then he did after Trump called the National Guard and the Marines.
Okay, so let's take it back a minute. Let's take it back a minute, because we didn't have power out here for a couple of days. So I wasn't watching the news. And by the time I turned it on, it was like I saw pictures of like just like the first wave of police officers, not even the reinforcement part. They were just getting pushed around and they were getting pushed back, were they not? I mean, is that what's happening? Yeah, absolutely. Is that how it works? They get pushed back, and then whoever sends in the reinforcements, and then when that doesn't work, then the National Guard comes to support them. And then now it's like, all right, now the Marines.
Usually you have the SWAT team comes in, you know, when if it's a smaller crowd. And then after that, you have the riot police. You know, they have in LA and bigger cities, they'll have what's called the riot squad or whatever. And then if that doesn't work and that gets out of control, that's when you call in, like, first of all, other departments will join you in the riot to help quell it. But if that doesn't work, then you call in the National Guard. And what was happening was the police were getting overwhelmed. If you saw on the news what they did to all the squad cars, what they were doing to the police, and what happened to peaceful protesting, the same thing happened during George Floyd. You had the Antifa, the Black Lives Matter came in, and they've escalated. And then they turn around and blame it on Trump and what he did. Trump did the right thing, and he should have done what he did. And what if you look at it, they won't show it. All the military and the National Guard are lined up in front of the federal building. The rest, a lot of them are helping ICE and protecting the ICE officers so they don't get attacked. And so you have these agitators that the media makes it sound like they're, you know, these peaceful people getting, you know, attacked and deported, and it's not. And then you have people with, thank God for all the cell phones, showing what they're doing. And it's
crazy. It's crazy what I've seen, some of the posts from people that vote differently than we might. I'm watching what they're saying. They're calling it kidnapping. Like, the big thing that I'm hearing now from at least that side is it keeps going back to, this is stolen land. These people are being kidnapped, and that's going on. And it's just like,
it's, you know what it is?
So we don't have so then this isn't a country, right?
Yeah.
So
it's completely delusional. These people are completely delusional. They don't see anything but blue. It's all it is to them is the color blue for their party. They vote strictly on the party lines. They won't listen to anything else. I have friends that are that way. And then when you try to talk to them, you can't even talk. The rage that comes in their face, it's like, dude, man, you obviously got something wrong with you. I can't even talk to you, you know? It's sad. It's really sad, because if they open their eyes, they would see what's truly going on. Like we did. We opened our eyes. We saw that this is not the party that we once knew. This is something completely different. And if you can't see that, something's wrong. Something is really, really wrong.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, in my case is I just don't want to live around that anymore. I don't want to be in a place where there could be, it's scary. You know what, actually, you know me and my pop culture references, one of the things that creeped me out the most, there was that, you know, The Walking Dead. There was the spinoff called Fear the Walking Dead, which I thought after the first two episodes sucked, so I stopped watching it. But the first episode, it was supposed to be in LA, even though going back to the movie thing, it's always like they were filming in Vancouver. I mean, people that watch something, you always think like, oh, that's LA. No, it's not. But anyway, so the whole thing was there was a big riot going on downtown, and the main character's son was there, and he's like, don't go to the riot. And of course, the kid goes to the riot, and all this stuff's going crazy, and you start seeing people like off in the corner or whatever, falling over with the zombies eating them and all that. And it just like, it was, like I said, the series I thought sucked, but that scene to me was so disturbing, because it just gets me thinking, all these people just packed into that small area that are rioting with nothing more than just, we hate America. I mean, you see what's going on. They're burning the American flag, spitting on it, waving their flags from whatever country they came from, all that stuff. It's like, that kind of stuff can get crazy real, real quick. And it's even like going to, I'm not really big on going to major concerts anymore or big sporting events or stuff.
Yeah.
I just don't like to be where there's thousands of people around, because it's almost like, you know, when you just feel yourself getting moved with the crowd.
Yeah.
And that's scary. And it's just, I, you know, so anyway, I consciously made a decision, my wife and I, to get away from all that. But then I saw something the other day where, you know, a buddy of mine from high school actually had sent me a link that in Huntsville, they're going to have this, I guess they're calling it No King. I don't know. They're trying to say Trump's trying to become
a king
or whatever.
That's like he's a king or something. Phrase.
Yeah, No King they're using. I saw there's going to be one in Huntsville. And I'm just like, now I'm asking you this again, as a former police officer, if that kind of stuff pops up in towns like Huntsville or, you know, smaller towns that are in red areas, are we going to put up with these absolute invaders? I mean, this is war. What they are doing is technically, you know, January 6th, the big insurrection. Oh my gosh, America will never be the same.
Yeah, well, how if much you watch the videos really of that, it's there? A complete joke. It's not an insurrection.
Right. Especially and then you're watching the
police
this
on video, escorting them around, opening doors for them, letting them in. Dude, it's unbelievable that these people can't see this. I just don't understand it.
And we're seeing fire and riots and all that stuff. My question is it's like, when is this going to be looked at? Is that these are people that hate our country and they are destroying our cities. When can we start putting foot to ass? I guess is my question. I would hope Huntsville would do that as a police officer. I mean, tell me, when is enough going to be enough and we can start seeing some skulls getting cracked? Because I am sick and tired of this, and I don't want to live like that. And if they bring that to my city, I'm going to be honest, and this is not going to be popular, but I'm going to say it. I want to see batons breaking skulls open. I am sick of this garbage, and I want it to end. And it's a peaceful when buildings are on fire, when people are being injured and hurt because they might think differently of, you know, politically than you do. Well, then that means you're not an American, because even though I might disagree with Karen Bass, Gavin Newsom, Donald Trump, whoever it might be that I might disagree with, the bottom line is I'm not going to go out and destroy things, and I'm not going to hurt people in order to get my message across. And people that do that do not belong in this country. And if they do it, I want to see them suffer. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm over it. What do you think?
Okay, so my opinion on that is, in a lot of ways, I'm really upset with a lot of law enforcement, especially in the areas where these scumbags are running rampant. So if it was me and I was working in an area like that and I was told to stand down, I would question and I would say, why am I being told to stand down when all this is going on? And they would say to me, it's none of your business. This is your supervisor talking. We are analyzing the situation. Well, you know, I mean, you got to say to yourself, okay, good. I'm going to make a mental note of that. If it gets worse and I have a policeman calling for help, I'm going to say, listen, I got a policeman here calling for help and they tell me to stand down. I'm going to say, screw you. I'm not standing down. I'm going to go help the policeman out. If they fire me over that, which is really hard to do, especially if you can articulate in court or in front of the police and fire commission what you were doing, and you know you're doing something that you should be doing, because if your fellow officer is in trouble, you have to go there. My question is as a police officer, they see what's going on. None of them, which really bothers me, are stepping away from the uniform and becoming people and saying enough is enough. I'm not, even though you're telling me I need to do this, because now law enforcement is being run by these radical liberals. You got what happened was, is not only did they hire certain judges to run, you know, all these districts, like, you know, the Letitia James and all these people, Fannie Willis, that completely ran roughshod and did whatever they want. Now you're seeing what kind of criminals they are. You got that happening with the police departments. Once they get in the liberal areas, the liberal mayor will appoint a liberal police chief, a liberal fire chief. And they're the ones who have the ultimate say in what's going on. So if you got a liberal running everything, all the people underneath, whether you're a liberal or not, have to obey them no matter what they say. So they can dictate policy and create more chaos by doing that. And so as police officers on the street, if you see that these liberal or basically communist supervisors in the police department and the fire department are doing things that you feel are ultimately wrong, and you know in your heart they're wrong, you have evidence it's wrong, they should be speaking up and they should be doing their own thing and saying, you know what? I'm not doing that. And I don't see that happening. I see them going along with all the BS that these liberals are doing.
But doesn't that come back to going back to one of the first things you talked about in this was when you're hired, the questions they ask you, are you going to rock the ship? Are you going to go along? So even though you disagree, you're saying that, well, I said in my job interview that I'm not going to try to, you know, usurp my supervisor. So,
right. You know. So in my instance, remember I gave is it a crime? Well, if you're doing a crime, and that crime is you're allowing political bias to dictate safety you are committing a crime, because if a police officer gets hurt or someone else, that's on you. And I am going to be the one to help out my fellow officer and go above and beyond and basically not abide by their command, so to speak, because it is a command, because it's paramilitary. So I just think that, number one, in numbers, you can win. If all these policemen don't agree with this, they need to all band together and say, listen, we're not doing this anymore. And a lot of them have families. A lot of them are afraid because they won't be able to support their family. But in all, your family is the one that's going to be suffering from this. Because number one, your property values are going to go down. You could have this happen to you just like it's happening to these other police officers. So you have to start thinking about the big picture. Where is this going to lead to, right? You have to start doing what's right and forget about the whole political bias and the political agenda.
Well, what about the fact that we're going to start seeing stuff popping up all over the place now? So, I mean, that's the thing they're saying is that, like, because Trump escalated this so much, because these peaceful people, these poor peaceful people that are doing this.
That's the whole reason he did, because they attacked him. Yeah, no, I'm just reiterating that the whole thing started because they attacked federal officers. And then the local police did not get involved to help them. Then Trump got involved. So obviously the liberals, you know what, too, is think about this. What did they? Trump was president when COVID came out. They're gonna come up with something else that's pretty radical that could shut down the whole country to try and ruin his presidency, or just ruin the country. Period. Because they're like the crying baby that's not getting their way, and they're gonna go down and they'll burn the ship if they have to, if they're gonna lose their power. And that's what they're doing. They're burning the ship right now, and people have 100%. To wake up. And yeah, 100%. Especially in law enforcement. Law enfororsement needs to wake up. All the foot soldiers, they need to wake up, and they need to come against this. And they need to
Coming to your town soon, is what I'm saying. What I wanted to know what you think as a police officer, because now they're saying that, like, oh, I saw something today where it's in Omaha, Nebraska. It's going to start popping up in all these places.
Yeah.
And so is President Trump going to be able to send the National Guard everywhere?
Mike, what are police going to do? It's strategically happening. They're doing it in red states to make it look politically sound. Like, look at, even the red states are starting to act up. Well, it's not. They're paid agitators. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing is they're bringing these people there to start these, you know, to light. Basically, they're the tinder, right? And then they're getting one of their scumbags to light the fire. And then they're blowing on it with more people. And before you know it, look at the story we got in Omaha, Nebraska. Look at the story we got in Huntsville, Alabama. Hey, these are red states. Even they're rebelling. And it's paid agitator. These people will destroy America if they're losing power. And that's exactly what they're doing. And people are going, like, the liberal voter is going right along with it. More people are waking up, because that's how Trump won. More liberals came over. More liberals have changed and bought into the, you know, hey, this is not our party thing. You know, if you look at Michael Rappaport, you know who he is, right? Used to be a huge anti-Trumper. He's a Trumper now. He said, I can't take what this party's doing. Look at Fetterman. He's becoming not a Trumper, but he's talking out against this party. What have we become? You got Bill Maher. Look what he's saying. You got John Stewart. He's also like saying, what is wrong with our Democratic Party? And you got Tulsi Gabbard left, RFK left, a lifetime family of Democrats. President was a Democrat, left the party to join Trump. You mean to tell me, as a liberal voter, a Democrat voter, you can't see your party is nuts and is not the same party you voted for? I just don't understand it. I don't.
Well, now that we've got them attacking police officers and rioting, it's like I just don't understand how that can't. So yeah. I guess my question is, let's tie this back in, all this riot talk, back to your career. Looking back now, where you're at in your life now, are you glad that you left the police force?
It sucks, and I do miss the job. So to answer your question, I would have stayed till I retired. I would have probably put 30 years in, which would have been 2000 would have been 30 years. I mean, 2020 would have been 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, so you did it. You did it for 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. 9.5 years. So
I did. It's funny. I taught for 9 years. So
yeah,
but same thing.
Right,
and then,
there.
And say, then hey, we bounced.
This is a good segue. We're talking about the politics. And I feel that a lot of what's going on in the world has been the breakdown of the school system, indoctrinating these kids. And you being a former teacher, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that. What you started, and did you see any changes? You were becoming a teacher in this indoctrination of this whole, like, number one, why on earth are we teaching kids in grade school about transgenderism and sexualizing them? I didn't know if you saw any of that, or how did the whole process go for you?
Well, I mean, as far as teaching goes, I can just say that I might have said this on other podcasts. My dad was a teacher. I always wanted to be like my dad, so I went to college to be a teacher. He was an English teacher, so I got my degree in English. And
but did you have a passion for it? Did you have a passion for it?
Oh, absolutely! I used to love reading short stories, and I mean, come on, every time we get a down moment here, I'm telling a movie story or something like that. I love stories. I love storytellers. You know. And anyway, that being said, so I just loved English literature. So when you go to college to be a teacher, you go through your regular classes, you got to have your core, all that stuff. And then you start taking all of the extra classes. And, you know, I'm going to be honest, John, I'm not saying I slacked. I mean, I was like a B student, but I think about looking back, I went back to my parents' house 2 weeks ago, and I was going through old boxes and whatnot, finding some of my old books and some of the classes. And I was looking and remembering some of the stuff that we took. And it's crazy that even back when I would have been doing this between like 95 and 97 is when I got into my like 300-400 level, you know, English classes, you know, I saw a lot of wokeness coming.
Yeah.
I'm looking back, and back then it didn't even register. I didn't even know anything about politics. I didn't know anything about, you know, the liberalism or any of that stuff. And it's like, I'm looking back at the stuff that we're reading, like, you know, different critical theories and deconstruction and all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, you know, postmodernism and just things that were just like,
Yeah.
And you know, I saw a book when I went home. It was a class I took, Growing as Men and Women, you know, and I kind of started flipping through some of that. And it was, I mean, I wrote my senior thesis on feminism, you know, my whole thing was my sister was a fantastic athlete, much better than I ever was. And I remember when she won Player of the Year, she did it like consecutive years, but her first Player of the Year award, she was for the county. It showed her as the softball pitcher. And then it showed the boys Player of the Year. It was just talking about their stats and how good they are and all this. But with my sister, it was like talking about the stats, but then it was like, and Anne is a caring member of the community, and it tried showing. Yeah. So then I was, you know, looking at feminism with like binary oppositions, you know, black, white, light, dark, you know, male, female, you know, if you look at something and from the male perspective, you know, these are masculine traits. So being an athlete as a woman, those are masculine traits. When we think of athletics and aggression and, you know, competitiveness and all that, those tend to be on the same spectrum as, you know, male strength, that sort of a thing. But so in order for us to be palatable, for that to be palatable with a woman athlete, at least back then, you know, then they had to add in some, well, she's a caring member of her community and she likes to play with dolls. I mean, they didn't say that, but you know what I'm saying? It's like, you got to add that stuff to sort of supplement that, so we don't freak out. Of course, all that's been completely subverted. Now we got dudes that say they're women playing sports against girls. So all that's out the window right now too. But yeah, so I guess back in college, looking back now, I could see some hints of what you're, and I'm going to get to what you're talking about. I could see some hints of that coming. So, you know, you do your, and every, when you were talking about your way you got into being a police officer, going through, you probably had to do ride-alongs, all that sort of stuff. It's almost the same format as being a teacher. I had to do my pre-student teacher. I'm kind of on the sidelines watching other teachers, and every now and then go up and teach a lesson. And then when it comes to student teaching, then, you know, it's kind of like I have to go actually go out and teach this class. My wife with her residency, you know, to become a doctor. It's like, you got to go through the steps. And like you said about being street smart, it like as a teacher, I'll never forget one of my favorite teachers ever, a guy by the name of Mark Haisley. I would just sit in his class. The guy is pure entertainment. I mean, he would tell mom stories, right? He'd be talking about walking through the bush with you hate to be the point guy because you got to walk through with a machete. And I'm like, well, I got to swing the machete in the fields because you don't know if a cobra is sitting up there. You got to cut its head off and all that. I'm like, oh my God, you know, he would tell these crazy stories.
But I
asked him when I graduated and came back to be a teacher, I was asking him, I said, you know, let me ask you a question about teaching. What am I going to do if I enter a classroom and I got a student that's smarter than I am, that knows more. And he's like, oh, it's going to happen. Don't worry about it. I'm like, what do I do? He's like, hey, look, they might know more than you, but they're not going to be able to shovel it like you can. And I was like, you're right. So, you know, going back to street smarts, being a good police officer, you don't have to be some bookworm. Now, again, do I need to know basic grammar? Do I need to understand story and plot and all the, I need to know all that stuff. But for the most part, yeah, you'll have a student from time to time that's smarter than you, but you know, I'll be able to debate them at that level. You know, I taught sophomores, so it was rare that I was going to have a sophomore sit down and be like, all right, now we're going to have a debate and I'm going to wipe the floor with Mr. Foster. You know what I mean? So that didn't really happen. But I did have some smart kids. But so anyway, when I was teaching, I remember the first time I was shocked, to answer your question, about this crazy Marxist stuff. And I remember this one teacher, I'm not going to say her name, but she was just an unpleasant human being, again, not knowing anything about politics. And this was right after the beginning of the Gulf War. So this would have been like 90, I don't know, it was right after 9/11. So 2001, I was going to say 99, 2001-ish. And I remember her saying, like, he's not my president. George Bush isn't my president. And I'm like, yeah, but you're an American, so he's your president. I mean, Bill Clinton's our president, then George Bush, I mean, you know, not my president. I was kind of like, that's weird. That was, again, one of the first times that any politics entered my head at all. Because as an educator, my theory was always, always, I want my students, no matter what, to be free thinkers. I don't come in and care if they come in and tell me, Mr. Foster, the sky is pink, purple, yellow. I don't care. I'm like, that's great. Just back it up. All I'm asking is that you present an original thought to me and be able to back it up. That's it. I just wanted them to be free individual thinkers, not this group think, you know, like, oh, we all just, no matter what, everybody hates whatever, everybody hates Trump, so we all have to think the exact same. No, have a little critical thought. That's one of the reasons why guys like Joe Rogan became so popular, is that he was a liberal.
Yeah, he's another one. He was a big liberal. And Elon, big liberal. Changed, Elon,
but these are people that use their brains and are free, critical thinkers. I want to be a critical thinker. If Donald Trump starts doing a bunch of stuff that I don't like, I'm not going to be like, well, you know, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm Republican, so I'm going to just say whatever. I'm gonna say whatever he says. Absolutely not. I'm like, nah, that's wrong. I mean, if the dude truly was a fascist, if he really came in here and was trying to get my wife to go to Guantanamo Bay because she's a brown person, or he was doing true fascist Hitler type stuff, and it's like, all right, today we got to burn up all the Chinese people and put them in concentration camps, I'd be like, well, I didn't sign up for this, man. I'm jumping ship.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, you said the ship is burning. So many people staying on the ship. So going back to why is this happening? I absolutely 100% blame this, not only on parents being absent from the whole situation. And this is one of the good things about COVID, is that now that the kids had to do their lessons and their homeschool stuff happening at home, parents were like, what did they say? Wait a second.
Hang on a second.
And they started seeing what's really going on.
Right.
And it's like, that is, so now at least parents are hopefully being more engaged. You're seeing more homeschooling and all this. And they kind of had a wake up call, like, what's really going on in the schools?
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw the things that were going on in LAUSD, and just this flat out just anti-American rhetoric that is being beat in these people's heads, especially in the big cities. And then the acceptance of all this, like, you know, one of the things we got down here to Alabama, I mean, I've said this before, a dad can dream. If you had to pick a, you know, a profession that I'd want Maggie to have, we're in Rocket City. I'd love her to be an astronaut. How cool would that be?
Yeah.
And I think that'd be awesome. And, you know, so the first thing I was thinking is, when she's old enough, she's going to go to space camp. Over my dead body, Huntsville's Space and Rocket Center, space camp my daughter will never go to, because I found out that it wasn't just one of the camp counselors wasn't just a transgender. It was a satanic transgender that I kept all the screenshots from. I was looking, goats, inverted pentagrams, upside down crosses, all this stuff. And this is someone, and I'm going to say it the way I want to say it right now. I'm taking away all the politically correct garbage right now. I'm going to say it the way I feel. A dude, an effing dude, was in the girls' shower rooms with the little girls. A dude that says he's a chick. And yeah, I'm saying it offensively right now because that's how I feel. The thought of my daughter growing up, someone like Riley Gaines, imagine she likes, let's pick a sport. I don't know, pick anyone. Tennis, plays doubles. She's into doubles tennis. And, or better yet, just singles tennis. And we go, and nowadays, it's not like you just play three sports like back when you were out there. It's like, well, it's baseball season. It's baseball. Now it's, everything's individualized. So if you play baseball, the rest of the year, you're going to camps, you're going to clinics, you're having individual, you know, coaches, all this kind of stuff. If we do all that, and then she goes out there her senior year hoping to get a scholarship to go to Auburn or Alabama or whatever it is, and some dude with long hair that says he's a woman comes out there and packs her stuff sideways. I'm going to sit here. Like, I almost don't want her to play sports so she doesn't have to deal with that garbage.
Yeah.
And it's like, and now it's like by me saying what I just said right there, people, oh, yeah, we're going to cancel me. I don't care. I feel like Tony Montana from Scarface. There's nothing you can do to me that Castro has not already done.
I said no kids. I said no kids.
You leave the kids alone, okay?
Even Tony Montana says leave the kids alone, man.
Even one of the most vile gangsters of all time had a code of honor. So it's stuff like that that I see that drives me crazy, where it's like, okay, now all of a sudden you're saying that my daughter is going to have to grow up in a situation where she's going to have to accept that she's going to have to play against boys just because we are honoring mental illness. I don't think so.
Honoring mental illness is exactly what it is, man.
I mean, it's like the things what they're doing is like Dan Bongino used to say it. It's all about body blows. They're softening us up. Well, it's not, you know, it's not a riot. It's going back to American History X. I'm not saying I agree with Derek Vineyard, but he was like that part where he's like, it's not a riot. It's rage. It's like they're changing all this stuff. It's like it's not a guy. It's a transgender. It's just, and it's like we have to start going along with this. And that's what's happening. The education system is that teachers aren't being like, whoa. If I was still a teacher and I saw some dude playing against girls, I'd be like, that is not right. We're teachers nowadays because they've got their pinkies up drinking their soy lattes and their overeducated children that went to school for underwater basket weaving and have been completely indoctrinated into this Marxist, leftist, communist ideology that is running rampant on the schools. They're not going to say a damn thing. And that's why you're seeing more people homeschool, like this guy whose dad was a teacher and an administrator.
Yeah.
My sister is a teacher and I was a teacher, and I don't want my daughter going to a public school. So it's either going to be some form of a Christian school or it's going to be homeschool, because I'm not going to have my daughter come home like my friend's daughters who went to the University of Michigan and came home and put Black Lives Matter stuff all over the house and told their father that he's a racist piece of white garbage. That's the stuff that's not going to happen on my watch, and that's the stuff that's going on. So as long as that takes place, what do I want Donald Trump to do with the education system?
Yeah.
Burn it to the ground. Yeah. Give it back to the states. If California wants to have their students learn about dudes playing sports and guys that menstruate and do all that, man, have at it. But here in Alabama, if we want to go in and say the Pledge of Allegiance and a prayer before the football game, then by George, we should be able to do it.
Yeah,
and
you know, tell you what it's like, though, Mike. To me, here's what it's like. It's like, you know, I want to pretend I'm Cinderella and you have to go along with it and you have to patronize me. You have to include it in your real life and you have to accept that I'm Cinderella and I want to be Cinderella. And if you don't, you're a hater, you're this, you're that, and everyone else is going to come after you, including...
I'm homophobic. I'm racist. I'm something.
It's insane that we're being forced to play dress up.
Yeah,
and agree with exactly their dress up and go along with the facade and the outrageousness of the entire situation. And it's like me. It's like my kid. If my kid's screwing up and he's living in a fairy tale and he wants me to go along with his fairy tale, I'm gonna discipline that kid and I'm going to say, you're going to drop your fairy tale. It ain't going to go on in this house. And it's done. And what really bothers me is being forced to acknowledge mental illness. That's exactly what it is.
But right there, John,
mental illness.
What you said is true. And that doesn't mean I'm going to be hateful. Dude, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I worked in a gay bar in West Hollywood for 6 years. Okay.
Yeah.
I saw transgenders, all that kind of stuff. I wasn't mean to them. I'm not saying that they can't go out and have productive lives or get jobs or do anything like this. But if it's someone you talk about a transgender, these are people that obviously have the highest suicide rate. They've got it's a mental illness, and you want them to go have weapons in the military. You want them to be camp counselors for our kids. That's where I'm going to have to pump the brakes and be like, look, I want this person to have a happy life. I love them in Christ. Great.
And I do miss the job. So to answer your question, I would have stayed till I retired. I would have probably put 30 years in, which would have been 2000 would have been 30 years. I mean, 2020 would have been 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, so you did it for 10 years?
Yeah. 9.5 years. So
I did. It's funny. I taught for 9 years. So
yeah,
but same thing.
Right there.
And then we bounced.
This is a good segue. We're talking about the politics. And I feel that a lot of what's going on in the world has been the breakdown of the school system indoctrinating these kids. And you being a former teacher, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that. What you started, and did you see any changes you were becoming a teacher in this indoctrination of this whole, like, number one, why on earth are we teaching kids in grade school about transgenderism and sexualizing them? I didn't know if you saw any of that, or how did the whole process go for you?
Well, I mean, as far as teaching goes, I can just say that I might have said this on other podcasts. My dad was a teacher. I always wanted to be like my dad, so I went to college to be a teacher. He was an English teacher, so I got my degree in English. And
but did you have a passion for it? Did you have a passion for it?
Oh, absolutely. I used to love reading short stories. And I mean, come on, every time we get a down moment here, I'm telling a movie story or something like that. I love stories. I love storytellers, you know? And anyway, that being said, so I just loved English literature. So when you go to college to be a teacher, you go through your regular classes, you got to have your core, all that stuff. And then you start taking all of the extra classes. And, you know, I'm going to be honest, John, I'm not saying I slacked. I mean, I was like a B student, but I think about looking back, I went back to my parents' house 2 weeks ago, and I was going through old boxes and whatnot, finding some of my old books and some of the classes. And I was looking and remembering some of the stuff that we took. And it's crazy that even back when I would have been doing this between like 95 and 97 is when I got into my like 300-400 level, you know, English classes, you know, I saw a lot of wokeness coming. I'm looking back, and back then it didn't even register. I didn't even know anything about politics. I didn't know anything about, you know, the liberalism or stuff. And it's like, I'm looking back at the stuff that we're reading, like, you know, different critical theories and deconstruction and all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, you know, postmodernism and just things that were just like, And you know, I saw a book when I went home. It was a class I took, Growing as Men and Women, you know, and I kind of started flipping through some of that. And it was, I mean, I wrote my senior thesis on feminism, you know, my whole thing was my sister was a fantastic athlete, much better than I ever was. And I remember when she won Player of the Year, she did it like consecutive years, but her first Player of the Year award, she was for the county. It showed her as the softball pitcher. And then it showed the boy and the boys Player of the Year. It was just talking about their stats and how good they are and all this. But with my sister, it was like talking about the stats, but then it was like, and Anne is a caring member of the community, and it tried showing. Yeah. So then I was, you know, looking at feminism with like binary oppositions, you know, black, white, light, dark, you know, male, female. You know, if you look at something and from the male perspective, you know, these are masculine traits. So being an athlete as a woman, those are masculine traits. When we think of athletics and aggression and, you know, competitiveness and all that, those tend to be on the same spectrum as, you know, male strength, that sort of a thing. But so in order for us to be palatable, for that to be palatable with a woman athlete, at least back then, you know, then they had to add in some, well, she's a caring member of her community and she likes to play with dolls. I mean, they didn't say that, but you know what I'm saying? It's like, you got to add that stuff to sort of supplement that, so we don't freak out. Of course, all that's been completely subverted now, where we got dudes that say they're women playing sports against girls. So all that's out the window right now too. But yeah, so I guess back in college, looking back now, I could see some hints of what you're, and I'm going to get to what you're talking about. I could see some hints of that coming. So, you know, you do your, when you were talking about your way you got into being a police officer, going through, you probably had to do ride-alongs, all that sort of stuff. It's almost the same format as being a teacher. I had to do my pre-student teacher. I'm kind of on the sidelines watching other teachers, and every now and then go up and teach a lesson. And then when it comes to student teaching, then, you know, it's kind of like I have to go out and teach this class. My wife with her residency, you know, to become a doctor. It's like, you got to go through the steps. And like you said about being street smart, it like as a teacher, I'll never forget one of my favorite teachers ever, a guy by the name of Mark Hazley. I would just sit in his class. The guy is pure entertainment. I mean, he would tell NOM stories, right? He'd be talking about walking through the bush with it. You hate to be the point guy because you got to walk through with a machete. And I'm like, well, you got to swing the machete in the fields because you don't know if a cobra is sitting up there. You got to cut its head off and all that. I'm like, oh my God, you know, he would tell these crazy stories. But I asked him when I graduated and came back to be a teacher, I was asking him, I said, you know, let me ask you a question about teaching. What am I going to do if I enter a classroom and I got a student that's smarter than I am, that knows more. And he's like, oh, it's going to happen. Don't worry about it. I'm like, what do I do? He's like, hey, look, they might know more than you, but they're not going to be able to shovel it like you can. And I was like, ah, you're right. So, you know, going back to street smarts, being a good police officer, you don't have to be some bookworm. Now, again, do I need to know basic grammar? Do I need to understand story and plot and all the, I need to know all that stuff. But for the most part, you'll have a student from time to time that's smarter than you, but you know, I'll be able to debate them at that level. You know, I taught sophomores, so it was rare that I was going to have a sophomore sit down and be like, all right, now we're going to have a debate and I'm going to wipe the floor with Mr. Foster. You know what I mean? So that didn't really happen. But I did have some smart kids. But so anyway, when I was teaching, I remember the first time I was shocked, to answer your question, about this crazy Marxist stuff. And I remember this one teacher, I'm not going to say her name, but she was just an unpleasant human being. Again, not knowing anything about politics. And this was right after the beginning of the Gulf War. So this would have been like 90, I don't know. It was right after 9/11. So 2001. I was going to say 99, 2001-ish. And I remember her saying, like, he's not my president. George Bush isn't my president. And I'm like, but you're an American, so he's your president. I mean, Bill Clinton's our president, then George Bush, I mean, you know, not my president. And I was kind of like, that's weird. That was, again, one of the first times that any politics entered my head at all. Because as an educator, my theory was always, always, I want my students, no matter what, to be free thinkers. I don't come in and care if they come in and tell me, Mr. Foster, the sky is pink, purple, yellow. I don't care. I'm like, that's great. Just back it up. All I'm asking is that you present an original thought to me and be able to back it up. That's it. I just wanted them to be free individual thinkers, not this group think, you know, like, oh, we all just, no matter what, everybody hates whatever, everybody hates Trump. So we all have to think the exact same. No, have a little critical thought. That's one of the reasons why guys like Joe Rogan became so popular, is that he was a liberal.
Yeah, he's another one. He was a big liberal. Elon, big liberal. Elon,
but these are people that use their brains and are free, critical thinkers. I want to be a critical thinker. If Donald Trump starts doing a bunch of stuff that I don't like, I'm not going to be like, well, you know, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm Republican, so I'm going to just say whatever. I'm going to say whatever he says. Absolutely not. I'm like, nah, that's wrong. I mean, if the dude truly was a fascist, if he really came in here and was trying to get my wife to go to Guantanamo Bay because she's a brown person, or he was doing true fascist Hitler type stuff, and it's like, all right, today we got to burn up all the Chinese people and put them in concentration camps, I'd be like, well, I didn't sign up for this, man. I'm jumping ship.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, you said the ship is burning. So many people staying on the ship. So going back to why is this happening? I absolutely 100% blame this, not only on parents being absent from the whole situation. And this is one of the good things about COVID, is that now that the kids had to do their lessons and their homeschool stuff happening at home, parents were like, what did they say? Wait a second.
Hang on a second.
And they started seeing what's really going on.
Right.
And it's like, that is, so now at least parents are hopefully being more engaged. You're seeing more homeschooling and all this. And they kind of had a wake up call, like, what's really going on in the schools?
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw the things that were going on in LAUSD, and just this flat out, just anti-American rhetoric that is being beat in these people's heads, especially in the big cities. And then the acceptance of all this, like, you know, one of the things we got down here to Alabama, I mean, I've said this before, a dad can dream. If you had to pick a, you know, a profession that I'd want Maggie to have, we're in Rocket City. I'd love her to be an astronaut. How cool would that be?
Yeah.
And I think that'd be awesome. And, you know, so the first thing I was thinking is, when she's old enough, she's going to go to space camp. Over my dead body, Huntsville's Space and Rocket Center, space camp my daughter will never go to, because I found out that it wasn't just one of the camp counselors wasn't just a transgender. It was a satanic transgender that I kept all the screenshots from. I was looking, goats, inverted pentagrams, upside down crosses, all this stuff. And this is someone, and I'm going to say it the way I want to say it right now. I'm taking away all the politically correct garbage right now. I'm going to say it the way I feel. A dude, an effing dude, was in the girls' shower rooms with the little girls. A dude that says he's a chick. And yeah, I'm saying it offensively right now because that's how I feel. The thought of my daughter growing up, someone like Riley Gaines, imagine she likes, let's pick a sport. I don't know, pick anyone. Tennis, plays doubles. She's into doubles tennis. And, or better yet, just singles tennis. And we go, and nowadays, it's not like you just play three sports like back when you were there. It's like, well, it's baseball season. It's baseball. Now it's everything's individualized. So if you play baseball, the rest of the year, you're going to camps, you're going to clinics, you're having individual, you know, coaches, all this kind of stuff. If we do all that, and then she goes out there her senior year hoping to get a scholarship to go to Auburn or Alabama or whatever it is, and some dude with long hair that says he's a woman comes out there and packs her stuff sideways, I'm going to sit here. Like, I almost don't want her to play sports so she doesn't have to deal with that garbage.
Yeah.
And it's like, and now it's like, by me saying what I just said right there, people, oh, yeah, we're going to cancel me. I don't care. I feel like Tony Montana from Scarface. There's nothing you can do to me that Castro has not already done.
I said no kids. I said no kids.
You leave the kids alone, okay?
But even Tony Montana says leave the kids alone, man.
Even one of the most vile gangsters of all time had a code of honor. So it's stuff like that that I see that drives me crazy, where it's like, okay, now all of a sudden you're saying that my daughter is going to have to grow up in a situation where she's going to have to accept that she's going to have to play against boys just because we are honoring mental illness. I don't think so.
Honoring mental illness is exactly what it is, man.
I mean, it's like the things, what they're doing is like Dan Bongino used to say it. It's all about body blows. They're softening us up. Well, it's not, you know, it's not a riot. It's going back to American History X. I'm not saying I agree with Derek Vineyard, but he was like the part where he's like, it's not a riot. It's rage. It's like they're changing all this stuff. It's like it's not a guy. It's a transgender. It's just, and it's like we have to start going along with this. And that's what's happening. The education system is that teachers aren't being like, whoa. Like if I was still a teacher and I saw some dude playing against girls, I'd be like, that is not right. We're teachers nowadays because they've got their pinkies up drinking their soy lattes and their overeducated children that went to school for underwater basket weaving and have been completely indoctrinated into this Marxist, leftist, communist ideology that is running rampant on the schools. They're not going to say a damn thing. And that's why you're seeing more people homeschool, like this guy whose dad was a teacher and an administrator.
Yeah.
My sister is a teacher and I was a teacher, and I don't want my daughter going to a public school. So it's either going to be some form of a Christian school or it's going to be homeschool, because I'm not going to have my daughter come home like my friend's daughters who went to the University of Michigan and came home and put Black Lives Matter stuff all over the house and told their father that he's a racist piece of white garbage. That's the stuff that's not going to happen on my watch, and that's the stuff that's going on. So as long as that takes place, what do I want Donald Trump to do with the education system?
Yeah.
Burn it to the ground. Yeah. Give it back to the states. If California wants to have their students learn about dudes playing sports and guys that menstruate and do all that, man, have at it. But here in Alabama, if we want to go in and say the Pledge of Allegiance and a prayer before the football game, then by George, we should be able to do it.
Yeah, you know what it's like, though, Mike? Here's what it's like. It's like, you know, I want to pretend I'm Cinderella and you have to go along with it and you have to patronize me. You have to include it in your real life and you have to accept that I'm Cinderella and I want to be Cinderella. And if you don't, you're a hater, you're this, you're that, and everyone else is going to come after you, including...
I'm homophobic. I'm racist. I'm something.
It's insane that we're being forced to play dress up.
Yeah,
and agree with their dress up and go along with the facade and the outrageousness of the entire situation. And it's like me. It's like my kid. If my kid's screwing up and he's living in a fairy tale and he wants me to go along with his fairy tale, I'm gonna discipline that kid and I'm going to say, you're going to drop your fairy tale. It ain't going to go on in this house. And it's done. And what really bothers me is being forced to acknowledge mental illness. That's exactly what it is.
But right there, John,
mental illness.
That what you said is true. And that doesn't mean I'm going to be hateful. Dude, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I worked in a gay bar in West Hollywood for 6 years. Okay.
Yeah.
I saw transgenders, all that kind of stuff. I wasn't mean to them. I'm not saying that they can't go out and have productive lives or get jobs or do anything like this. But if it's someone you talk about a transgender, these are people that obviously have the highest suicide rate. They've got it's a mental illness, and you want them to go have weapons in the military. You want them to be camp counselors for our kids. That's where I'm going to have to pump the brakes and be like, look, I want this person to have a happy life. I love them in Christ. Great. That's fine. But that doesn't mean that I want that person mentoring my daughter. That doesn't mean that I want that person on the battlefield with people next to them while God only knows what's going through their head. And they're depressed about the fact that they don't have the proper hormones or whatever,
you know,
it is.
Amazing?
God knows what they're capable of.
If you as a Christian went in your class and started teaching Christian values to these these parents of these transgender kids who've pushed them to be transgender. Let's face it, Hollywood has the highest number of transgender. Why is that? Because the narcissistic parent is pushing it on the kid.
Megan Fox has two. Yeah. The chances of that are beyond astronomical. So to me, you know what those poor transgender kids she has are? Her Louis Vuitton purses. Oh, look at me. Yep, look at my virtue signaling. I'm such a good person. I've got transgender kids. That's sick.
Yep. It's and if you're in that kid's class and you're talking about your values and what the values should be of this kid, and they went home and told their mother, you know what that, you know what Megan Fox would do? She would run to that school board as fast as she could and say, you can't be, she would be going off. And I just, it just bothers me that what is happening is so Twilight Zone. And I can't believe that people are actually going along with it. The, with the men and women sports, the teaching kids these ideas. And then what's amazing to me is what they'll say is, oh, it's happening, but it's happening so far and few between, and the conservative media is picking it up and running with it. No, it's not. You have a story. All my buddies in Chicago have stories. Everybody has story. It's not an isolated incident. It's happening all over and rather frequently. So to sit here and tell me that it isn't, and it's being overblown and out of proportion is a complete and utter lie. It's happening everywhere.
This goes to show, you know me, I always got to throw a movie into it. One of my favorite horror movies of all time was the original Dawn of the Dead. And not just because zombies and bullets and blood and all that. Okay, we're back. And we're back. It is because of the metaphor that George Romero used to what a zombie is. So let's take what a zombie is. First of all, they're brain dead. How do you kill them? Shoot them in the head. Second of all, what does a zombie do? It eats people. It consumes. All it does is consumes. Doesn't build anything. Doesn't create anything. It just eats and consumes. Yep. And what did they do? They went back to the mall. Instinctively, why? Because the billboards and the shopping and look at the pretty lights and all this. If you... Anybody tells me the zombie apocalypse isn't real, I'll laugh in their face. Romero knew it back then. This consumerism, this group thought. I mean, you got one zombie, one-on-one zombie, you're going to be able to take them. But then there becomes a whole horde of them. And this, and it's just basically what is going on right now with these people. I'm sorry. I know this isn't a very Christian thing of me to say, but I don't even look at them like normal. To me, they look like zombies. They're all just following along. It's like, what does the news tell us what to think? Oh, let's go do that. And then what do? They go destroy, whether it's destroying a city in a riot, whether it's destroying a child's innocence or a child's future. By taking away their reproductive, I mean, taking a 7-year-old and girl and giving her a hysterectomy and a double mastectomy, whoever does that, and I'm just going to say this, and again, I'm now in a mood. I hope they burn in hell. Mm-hmm. I do, because that kid is going to grow up to be probably by the time the kid's 12. Wish they wouldn't have made that decision. And guess what? For the rest of their life, they're going to go on not being able to have children, not being able to have, as I have learned, in my opinion, one of the most beautiful things that I never saw coming, because I didn't want kids, didn't want a family. I can't imagine my life without my daughter now. And I can't imagine, you know, the fact that someone that would want that knowing I can't do that because of what happened to me 30 years ago or whatever it is when they pumped me full of hormones. That's just horrible, you know, the way that they're doing this stuff. And it's because, once again, all the zombies, because let's take a look at how it works, John. Like, put your tinfoil hat, but all these transgender surgeries, do you have any idea how much money is involved in that?
Well, it's a boatload of money, but also what happens is a lot of them are failing at astronomical rates. And then the people that it's happening to have nowhere to go for follow-up. The doctors go, well, we don't know what to do. And they just abandon these people. And then they get really depressed and they start killing themselves. And it's got the highest suicide rate per capita of anything. So you got to, I look at these people, I'm not mad. I'm mad when these people get mad at me because I don't want to go along with it. But if these people just started speaking out, what they need to do, if you're a transgender and you've had this happen to you where you've done your transition and then you've been screwed up and nobody's helping you, you need to come out and tell your story. And I could guarantee you conservatives would stand by these people because they know what they've done. It's not like a conservative hates people that are transgender. Dude, I mean, we used to go to drag shows in Chicago. I had so much fun when I go. We'd laugh. These guys and girls were funny. And I never looked at them and said, oh, you weirdos. It was an act to me. And if they, whatever they do in their own time is their business. But what they're doing in the media is they're making it sound like if you're transgender, you're hated by this group of people, which is basically conservatives, Christians, and, you know, other religions. But yet, if you're a Muslim, you can do all the hating you want and you're free to do whatever you want. But if you're a Christian or a Jew, forget it. You're done. So yeah. You got to ask yourself, what is the plot behind that? What they're trying to do is, now if you accept whatever a Muslim does is okay, but you go after a Christian and a Jew, they're the predominant ones in this country right now. So what you're doing is you're going to get these people, the Christians and the Jews, riled up. Hey, why aren't you doing anything? And then what happens is, by that mind think, you're getting the Christians now to go against and fight back to the Muslims. And now you're getting this headbutting of two different cultures of people, two different beliefs of people going at it that never would have went at it before. And now right. You're getting the Christians and the Jews upset because if everyone feels like the Muslims are getting favor, it's all by design, by design.
And where does it all start? Let me put a button on this one with education, because yep. I'm not going to say names, but let's just say someone very close to me, her son had a assignment about art, and I read this. So I saw it happen. And in this assignment, a paragraph was snuck in about all this, you know, anti-Second Amendment stuff and, you know, like anti, you know, pro-gun control, right. And blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what? And I'm reading this. And I'm like, what does this have to do with anything? They're slipping this stuff in to slowly change the mindset. I mean, look what's going on in the schools right now. So if you ask me, man, this was going to be, you know, John, it's funny. I thought this was going to be a talk where we're going to be like, and then I remember this time where this kid didn't have his homework and said, Mr. Foster, no. Yeah. We're over here like, rawr, you know, we are, you know, it's like,
now everybody knows what our conversations are when the lights are off.
Man, you know, our true colors are showing on this one. But how about this one? This is the one that trips me out. And this is a thing, furries. Do you know that they actually have kitty litter in some schools because kids identify as cats and that's where they go to the bathroom? Yeah. They actually have kitty litter in the bathrooms for the kids to go in and use kitty litter. I mean, it's like, my God, the inmates are running the prison. When are the adults going to show up and tell them no more? What's that?
So funny story real quick. You bring up that, you know, the kids are identifying as cats. Julie and I were on vacation one day. We were staying at this hotel. And the guy says to me, all these people were walking in these animal outfits. And I said to the guy, I said, and they were all going into this hall in there. I said, is there like a Halloween party in there? And he goes, oh, no. He goes, it's an exclusive party and it's perverts. And I go, what do you mean perverts? And he says, these people like to have sex and they go up into the rooms. They rent a whole floor and they supposedly have sex with like this thing that looks like an animal. And that's what they're called. They're called fervors. So, I mean, it's like there's a whole like cult of it. Now, listen, if that's what you want to do and you do that in your private time, that's fine. But don't come to school and teach my kid that this is okay to do and this is what you should do, you know? And that's the problem I have. So I think you and I are pretty acceptable of whatever somebody wants to do behind closed doors or whatever. Don't push it on me. Don't tread on me, man. And don't tread on my family.
There it is. That's the libertarian in me right there. It's like, hey, you do you, but don't expect me to do what you tell me to do.
Right.
You know, John, you know what my favorite quote, I think, of all time is now, especially in the day and age that we're living in with, you know, going back to the Dawn of the Dead, the zombies that are out there following whatever they're told to follow.
Yeah.
I love the book because I taught it 5 classes a day for 4 years. So I know it well. Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury, right? And the first quote in there by Juan Jimenez is his name. Yeah. It says, if they give you ruled paper, write the other way.
Interesting.
So I love that.
Yeah. So how would you write the other way if you're right-handed? You know, lefties write across the paper, right? So is it just, it's just a phrase is what you're saying, right?
I'm saying if they give you ruled paper, write the other way. If you've been given a structure,
right,
told what to think, but basically look at education. If you've been told to memorize everything a certain way, think outside the box.
Yeah. See, you know, that's the analytical. The right away, I think,
how do you write?
I'm like, well, how do you do that way? Analytical part of me always wants to think about that one. Well, if I look at that in reality, you really can't write the other way.
Oh, that's great. No, but I'm telling you, man, that's what, you know, going back to what we are, what we were as public servants. You know, you being a police officer, me being a teacher, it starts with, I guess it would have started with me. It starts with the family, then it goes on to the education system, mm-hmm. and then that's when the boys in blue get them. So by the time the people you were dealing with, the fight, the riots, domestic violence, all that stuff, that is just, I think that that's a failure of the education system and the family structure in this country. That's what I think. And then that you're the last line of defense just to keep law and order so people don't burn their cities down, which is what's going on now.
Unbelievable. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a mess, man. It's a mess.
Yeah, I just wish more law enforcement would start to rebel against it, you know, rebel against these, you know, these socialist leaders in the police department, in law enforcement, and just in general, and start saying, no, we're not going to do that, you know, especially when they're told to stand down when other, you know, law enforcement are asking for help, and you're told to stand down. Why? Because you want to see it escalate. That's the only reason they'd be told to stand down. They want it to escalate, and they want chaos to happen because Trump's president, and they want it to be all blown up. And it's really, I look at Newsom, I look at the whole state of California, you look at Illinois, you look at that, you know, that slob Pritzker and everything he's done. And then you can go to each one of the blue states and you just say to yourself, they're a mess, man. And people, I just don't understand how they still keep voting blue. I just don't. I don't understand how you can't see it. I just don't.
Because they've been given ruled paper and they write the way they're supposed to. Going back to it. The other way. That's what everybody talks about being red-pilled. That's all red-pilled is, John, is it's like, I think about what we've been told. Now, see, you and I grew up before all this woke ideology has just been interjected into us from teachers and all that. And you know, now, looking back in retrospect, when I educate my daughter, I want her to question everything. Like, oh, wow, this is going back to this person that I knew. Oh, wow, here's an art assignment. Why is there sentences slipped in here about gun control? I don't understand that. Can you explain that to me instead of just being like, okay, art is beautiful and we should have gun control. Okay, that's fine. Yeah. I'll do it. And that's what's going on. These kids' brains are being turned into mush. And sadly, because of this stuff right here, I just held up my cell phone to those of you listening in on, usually listening for those of you that watch it. You're like, what's the kid screaming at? That's that's old.
I remember when I first saw that, man. I was dying of laughter.
Yeah, but that's what I'm doing it for, Johnny boy. That's what I'm doing it for. but you know, but it just it just blows my mind how people can't see that we are just living this zombie-like existence where you're told what to do and you can't think for yourselves. The police officers that aren't able to be like, wait a minute, that is a crime. I'm going to go the other way. Teachers that sitting there, and my sister is a teacher, and I'm not going to throw her under the bus, but let's just say that I ask her, like, what's it like being a conservative teacher in a school where there's not a whole lot of you? And she's like, it's easy because I keep my mouth shut. So people like us, except for you and I here on the podcast, because we'll speak our minds. But like even as a teacher, if I was back in the classroom teaching and I go to the staff meetings and it's all a bunch of liberals that are going on and on, I'm probably just going to be like, just keep my mouth shut and just, you know, I'm not going to. I would be like these police officers that aren't going to say anything because it's like, well, I have tenure. I've got benefits. I'm going to get a pension. Is it worth fighting against them?
That's a sad thing. Why can they say something and it's okay, but we can't, you know? Well, it's just real, and I don't even want to say we. It's like we're pretty much the true meaning of what a Democrat is, if you think about it, right? Unions, you know, teaching, police, those are the original Democrats, right? And it's you know, steel workers, anyone in a union, that ain't the case anymore. They're not for that. They're for so many other things, and it's just really sad that you know. It's gone the way it has. And I just really feel people need to start voicing their opinions, standing up on the right, or I'll just say on the logical side.
That's it.
Right? It's logic. It's just complete logic. And they need to start speaking up. They need to start rebelling. They need to start doing things like that. And I'm not saying when I say rebel, fight and do the same thing that they're doing, you know. I'm saying just no, peacefully, no. I refuse to do that, you know, and just go against it, you know,
right the other way,
the other way,
right the other way. Well, John, I'm going to put a button on this, but I will say this, and I probably could speak for you, but I'll let you say your piece. As far as looking back in retrospect now, if someone came to me and said, hey, would you ever get back in education? Absolutely not. There's no way that you could pay me enough to go into a school where I'm going to have to deal with, you know, distracted cell phone, kids always right, school board saying that you got to have kitty litter in your room and, you know, and have a pride flag next to the American flag, and you're not allowed to stand up for the, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance, all that stuff. There's just no way. There's no possible way I would go back into it right now. Never going to happen.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Would you want to be a police officer in today's day and age?
You know what? I would have up until that, all the BLM riots and all the Antifa riots. At that point, you know, when I changed my mind is when the Chicago police were trying to, you know, they were in their riot gear and they were trying to calm the situation down. And their supervisors let people throw full bottles of ice at the policemen, hitting them in the head, some of them getting knocked out. And I just sat there and I said, what is going on here? This shouldn't be happening. It shouldn't be allowed. They should be able to defend themselves, protect themselves. And it's not. They just had to take everything. And then I'm listening to my buddies and what they're telling me. And I'm going, every one of them's like, man, I got 1 year left. I don't know if I'm going to make it, you know? And at that point I knew I would never want to be a cop again, all the way up to right before, you know, the whole George Floyd thing. Yes. But now I would never, ever in a million years go back to being a cop. It's just really sad. And you know what? They're having a hard time hiring people because no one wants the job anymore.
That's right.
You know? And society is going to go downhill because of that, you know? And it's going to be a free-for-all. And that's what they want, though. They want that. Because when they have a free-for-all, the government, the military needs to move in and overtake everything.
And that's, you know, Dan Bongino, going back to the zombie stuff, Dan Bongino always would say, he would talk about the Walking Dead theory. Is it bad enough to where you'll willingly walk into the prison? There was one season where they went into the prison and were holding up in there. And it's like, it got bad enough outside that it's like, all right, it's safer for us to be in the prison. And it's kind of like you just said, if things keep getting worse and worse and worse, fine, let the government handle this. Just take over, make everything better for us.
Yeah.
Willingly walk into, you know.
Yeah, right. Yep.
A slave, a prisoner, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And it's crazy. You know, my buddies and I from back in the day, you know, I still have like a little feed I'm on where it's me and a lot of my buddies from the, you know, late 70s, 80s. And we're always reminiscing back to the 80s, all of us, you know. It's like, hey, remember this? And we're, you know, posting stuff from the 80s, gym stuff, music, you know, TV shows. And it's just, it's melancholy because you remember a time of innocence when all this crap wasn't going on. But when I look back at it, dude, I can see where it started. And it even started back then.
Yes.
It even started back then.
That's
just
absolutely
by some
correct.
Of the things that I was told to do with my voting and why I was voting a certain way. It's exactly what the big numbers or the big systemic ideologies that are going around right now were starting back then in like the late 70s in high school.
I was listening to TimCast IRL, Tim Pool. I love him and his show.
Yeah, he's great, isn't he?
He is fantastic. And he had on Roseanne and somebody else, this other woman that was on there, but this woman was saying that like the United States hasn't been the United States since after World War II. And it started talking about, again, tinfoil hat time, but all this globalist banking, this globalist stuff and New World Order and all this crazy stuff that it's been like, that's really when things started changing, you know, like... And it's crazy. It's just ever since then, if you just keep looking, like you're right. If you go back and look at the 80s, you see the seeds being planted. I was talking about going back to college and looking at some of my old books being like, interesting. Yeah. And those were there. So it's crazy. But I guess the thing is moving forward, the only thing that's going to save this place is it always starts with family, quality education that teaches kids how to think and be free thinkers. And then an acceptable police force that's going to uphold the law. I mean, because without a rule of law, we don't have a country. That's just that simple.
Right.
That's all there is to it.
No, I agree, man.
This garbage that's going on and it's starting to spread everywhere. No bueno. But anyway, man, we started off with good intentions, but we sure took this to the dark side, didn't we? It's all good. Yeah. Well, hey. Yeah. It's kind of like anybody that's listening to this one, welcome to the real world. This is, you just heard a talk of John and I, a talk that we would have when the camera isn't rolling. So welcome to your episode 10. It was a banger, Johnny boy.
Yeah, I know. And remember, stay faithful, stay free, and stay strong, brother. Amen. Thanks for joining in to the F3 podcast.